sorry. I'm very sorry about hitting you on the knee. That's my intro to this episode. That's my new character. Uncle Fun says, I'm sorry I hit you so hard.
Wait, this got off the rails already.
No more. That's the end. That's the end of the podcast.
I'm going to ask you a question, and I want you to tell me an answer. Okay. What movie do you think of when you think of Stanley Kubrick?
I'm only thinking of Stanley.
The late lamented Stanley, who died just a few days ago. Mm-hmm. But no, he had nothing to do with any of this.
Yeah, I know, but I have no idea who this person is.
Okay. I'm going to list then a few of his movies, and you tell me if you've heard of them or seen them or both. Okay? Mm-hmm. Here we go. Spartacus.
Yes. See, heard.
You've heard of it. Mm-hmm. Lolita.
Is that based on the book?
Yes.
I've heard of the book.
Doctor Strangelove.
I've heard of it.
2001 A Space Odyssey.
I started watching it in my Mr. Smith science class.
Barry Lyndon.
No.
The Shining.
I've seen it and heard of it, and also read it.
A Clockwork Orange.
Heard about it, haven't seen it, started reading it, didn't like it.
Full Metal Jacket.
Nope.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Nope.
Then he died. there may be some more in there. I don't know.
Oh, I've seen a brief scene of The Clockwork Orange.
So this is obviously a guy who's made a lot of different kinds of movies. Mm-hmm. From 2001 to The Shining to A Clockwork Orange. He was kind of all over the place. There's some unifying themes in his movies, but the movie we're going to watch, 1957's Paths of Glory, is considered by some Stanley Kubrick, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, experts, scholars,
friends,
bozos,
fans,
some people say the Paths of Glory represents kind of the beginning of what we think of as Stanley Kubrick films. Like he starts gelling.
The beginning of the path.
Beginning of the Paths of Glory.
That's the joke I was making.
But... Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on your business.
I didn't mean to hit you so hard.
Stanley Kubrick, he started out as a photographer. He was actually a very successful young photographer, like back in the 40s. And then in the 50s, he started like making movies. He sort of apprenticed as a filmmaker. Then he just started making movies for Hollywood and just started having successful films. And before we knew it, he was the crazy-eyed, auteur, impossible-to-work-with artist that everyone came to know and tolerate, but still celebrate because he made some good movies. I wonder why Guillermo del Toro likes his work.
Is this like a theme with directors that del Toro likes?
That they have very strong visions and are kind of difficult to work with? Mm-hmm. Maybe. A little Guillermo del Toro news that we haven't talked about before we go off and watch our movie. Guillermo del Toro is currently working on a Netflix movie.
Oh, yeah.
Pinocchio. Mm-hmm. He's making an adaptation of Collodi's Pinocchio novel.
Probably going to be a lot darker than the Disney movie.
It might be. It might be about as dark as the Disney movie, because that Disney movie gets pretty grim.
More like blatantly dark.
Do you remember the part where Lampwick turns into a donkey?
No, yes.
He's like screaming and beating Pinocchio on the chest, and he's screaming and crying for his mama, and then his hands turn into hooves, and he just starts screaming and kicking things over. Mm-hmm. And then the last time you see him, he's like being sold into donkey slavery. That's pretty grim.
That's true. Remember the part where Pinocchio was locked in a birdcage?
That's pretty grim, too. In the novel, Lampwick gets beaten to death as a donkey.
That's probably what's going to happen.
That's pretty grim. That's pretty grim as well.
I was just, when you started talking about Pinocchio, I remember the conversation that, no, it was a YouTube video we watched together about, it was a guy, like, talking about all the plot holes, not plot holes, but like weird stuff in Pinocchio.
Oh yeah, old Cracked video. Uh-huh. Aww, and I miss Daniel O'Brien.
Like, about how like the town would not hold with that.
Right. The crazy old man who builds puppets. But I'm excited. I'm excited about Del Toro's Pinocchio. He's also, of course, producing Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, mm-hmm. Which I can't wait to start seeing footage after from that. That is not directed by him, but he's a producer and one of the writers.
We're still going to have to watch it.
And the good news that came out of Del Toro camp is, in the midst of all this terrible news from California, the people dying in the wildfires, people losing their homes, a major Hollywood set, a classic Hollywood set burning down. Guillermo del Toro's home, Bleak House, was in danger of being burned to nothing by the fire, and it managed. It survived. It did not get burned by the fire, but it was touch and go for a moment there. They did not know if he was going to lose literally everything in his house.
That would have been literally everything.
It would have been literally everything. And while, of course, the trinkets of an artist, the trinkets of a multimillionaire are nothing as compared to the lives of the human beings who have been lost by the fires. Mm-hmm. I would see a million Bernie Whiteson original prints burn in the ash before I would watch another person lose their lives due to this terrible fire. It would have been a terrible blow for the collection community, for the sci-fi horror community.
Yeah, imagine if the Berenstain Bears place burned down.
It would be terrible. Fortunately, it's in Pennsylvania where nothing burns.
Except for the souls of the damned.
Ah! Uncle Fun, no! Help me, I'm burning in hell!
No, I'll never see him again.
Uncle Fun's burning in hell, everyone. Just in case you were wondering. Uncle Fun's burning in hell. So, what are we talking about? Paths of Glory, Stanley Kubrick's 1957 movie, Paths of Glory. Shall we go to the viewing room and watch the movie?
The same place we are now?
Yep, here we go. Oh, wait. Everyone stop. Everyone stop. I'm Phil.
Dance. I'm Ollie.
What about chickens?
I said, and do the chicken dance.
I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And it...
we'll
what?
See.
What?
And we'll see you when it's done.
No, that's how we end the show. That's the last thing we do. This is the beginning of the show. Now you're doing it. You're just as bad as me. You're just as bad as me.
Don't make me bring out the phone card.
I'm Phil.
And I'm Holly.
And it's Del Toro time. What time is it?
4:20.
It's 4:20.
Blazing it.
Blazing it. We're blazing it here.
No, we're not.
The day before Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving tradition. It's still 4:20, everyone.
We record time setup.
And you know what the coincidence is?
What?
This is episode 69. No, it's not. I'm just
I
kidding.
Wish.
It was
I
not.
Wish.
It is not, though. It is not.
We have to make sure on episode 69 that we start recording at 4:20, though.
That's a good idea. That's a really good idea. We're back. We watched
Paths of Glory.
Paths of Glory. Very good. 1957's Paths of Glory.
It's the first time I remember the name
you
of a movie.
You do remember the name of the movie. It's been so long. Actually, it hasn't been as long this time since we saw the movie. Sometimes we take huge gap week, but this time it's been
a week.
It's a week. It's a week since the movie. A little peek behind the curtain. We usually don't have time to do both things in one day because that's a lot of time. So we have to.
We never have time to do both things in one day.
Once we did. We did for a while one summer.
That's because we didn't have any time.
Yeah, that's true. That crazy summer. Yeah. So we watched Paths of Glory. And I'm going to ask you, Ollie, I'm going to ask you just to tell our audience really quick, like it's the quickest summary you possibly can of this movie.
The horrors of war.
That's pretty much it. The horrors of war. This is a movie that's about how people of different classes are jerks to each other, how people in the army are jerks to you, how our war is full of jerks.
How everyone sucks.
Everyone's terrible. I have a sneaking suspicion. Correct me if I'm wrong. I have a sneaking suspicion this movie is a little anti-war. What are your thoughts?
You know, I don't know where you're seeing that. No idea.
So
it could also just be anti-French.
Oui, oui. The French sure did hate this movie.
I wonder why.
Well, what's funny is they were like, if you pick it apart, like legally and stuff, nothing that happens in this movie was ever legal in France. Like, they're like, no, this is never. French Army never
was
actually.
Is this just like an American thing?
No, it's it was based. The novel Paths of Glory was based loosely on a thing that really did happen during World War One.
Mm-hmm.
But he just sort of dramatized it just to make a point.
Mm-hmm.
But the French were like, we never executed people for stuff like, well, no, this wasn't. No, we didn't do this. Or I guess I should say, like, no, we never did it. Have a baguette. And
and that is when our podcast gets blocked in France.
We lost all of our French listeners. I'm sorry, French listeners.
It is okay.
They're fine with it. So So yeah, so this is the story of World War One. Mm-hmm. What was World War One like?
Awful.
It was bad. It was the worst war. World War One was especially terrible because it was people say it's like kind of the transitional period from like traditional, like way war had been fought in like the 19th century, like with like well-dressed soldiers and like the officers drinking their tea and like the glories of war. And
so it was not the British fighting.
It was not. Well, I mean, it was, war was always kind of considered like this game that nations played. Yeah, very strong. But like, and the soldiers were just pawns, and who care, like they were just fodder, and like it was a gentleman's game, and it was, you know, very much about like you had to
weapon technology wasn't that like
exactly
advanced, so people didn't die as often.
Well, they died a lot, but not in these horrible ways that we invented for world. Because all of a sudden World War One came along, and there was like all of a sudden there was just like suddenly tanks and poisonous gas and planes flying overhead and explosions, mortar shells, and the world just politically was changing, socially was changing, and World War One was basically like, let's strew the fields with bodies.
Let me rephrase what I said earlier. It wasn't as easy to kill people in war.
And just leave them rotting in the field. And mm-hmm. So this is very much about the horrors of trench warfare, where they dug these massive trenches, both sides, and everyone just kind of lived in the trenches. And you were lucky if, like, in a week you gained, like, 2 feet. And then you got knocked back into your trench, and then you start all over again, and you died of trench foot and trench mouth and trench fingers and trench face. It was terrible. It was a nightmare as you were eaten alive by, literally eaten alive by rats in your trench. Welcome to war. As illustrated in the classic Peanuts comic strips where Snoopy fights in World War One. Behind enemy lines. Curse you, Red Baron, he says.
So that's what that's from.
Yes, World War One.
No, I know it was from World War One, but I didn't know where the whole Red Baron Halloween sketch came from.
Yeah, Snoopy.
Poor Snoopy.
I know. Stuck behind enemy lines. But so this movie is set in France with the French. It's about the French fighting the Germans. But you never see the Germans.
No.
You only see the French.
No, you see the Germans, don't you?
No. You see one German at the very end. German woman. But you only ever see the French. But they are all played by not French. They're played by Americans and British.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically our star.
Not Americans and British people, just Americans and British.
Right, right. The concept. just flags.
Yeah.
We have our hero, Kirk Douglas, who was instrumental in getting this movie made, since the studios were like, no one will ever watch this movie because it is tragic and sad, Stanley Kubrick. And Kubrick was like, I read this book when I was like 14 and I loved it. I know I made one war movie that everyone hated. Can I make this movie instead? And they're like, here's $1 million. And he was like, thank you so much for not very much money for my war movie, but okay. And he was like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to make this movie and I'm going to become Stanley Kubrick. I'm going to basically invent all the Kubrickian things that people will talk about for the next few decades in this movie, including dolly shots and POV shots and zooming in and zooming back out in the middle of action scenes and criticizing war and bleak, bleak, bleak comedy and broad performances and a point you can't miss. And a Baroque architecture. I will set horrible things within the confines of Baroque architecture and use a few of my players from previous films and players who will be in future. Did you ever see The Shining?
Yes.
Remember the bartender, the ghost bartender? Mm-hmm. He was played by the actor who played the, I believe, the guy who got executed because he was from drawing lots. The guy who ended up getting the brain injury and being unconscious.
I thought he was familiar.
That's the same actor who played the bartender. And so Kubrick sort of reused. But this is the only movie he ever.
I asked you why that guy was familiar to me.
I didn't put it together until I saw it like in a little documentary. But Kirk Douglas, the lead in this, he's the only actor who played the lead in two Kubrick films. Kubrick usually he used a lot of the same actors, but he kind of tried to cycle through them. He and Kirk Douglas did not get along during the making of this because they were both very strong-willed.
Hmm.
But they respected each other, and he liked Kirk Douglas enough that he would cast him later on in Spartacus. So, yes. And he liked his actress, Christiane, enough that he would marry her. And me with her until the day he died. Very successful marriage. They had kids together. Everything.
Is that a joke because she played a German?
What? Oh, did I do that?
Yeah.
Yes. Then it was totally intentional. So this is a movie about the French army, and they are in the trench, and there are two officers who are kind of jerks.
Oh, really?
One played by Adolphe Manjou.
I don't think you can say what two officers who were kind of jerks, because there were many more.
Well, they were like the main jerks. They were like super jerks.
Except for one of them didn't start out seeming like a jerk.
Right. He was awesome. Like he was creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Like very creepy. It was Major General Georges Brulard, played by Adolphe Manjou, and Brigadier General Paul Moreau, played by George MacCready. Moreau is kind of the main villain of the movie.
Yep.
And Brulard tells Moreau, like, we want to take the anthill, which is just this little tiny, like, mountain. Not even like a hill. Just like a hill.
It's literally an anthill.
Yeah. The Germans control it, and they're like, we want to take it. We want to take it. And Moreau is like, we can't take it. And it'd be stupid to take it. There's no real tactical reason to take it. And Brulard is like, you'll get a promotion, pat on the back if you do it. And suddenly, like, Moreau, like, goes crazy. He's just like, one that I must take the anthill. And so he tells Kirk Douglas, who plays commanding officer Dax, Colonel Dax, he's like, you and your men have to take the anthill. And Dax is like, we will lose more than half of my men if we do that. We don't have enough men. And he's like, do it anyway.
All right, what resources will we get? What help will we get?
None, nothing. So you are literally going to go send your men to die taking this stupid thing. For no reason except that I want a promotion. And you have to do it. And what happens?
They die.
Like most of the people, like so many die. And they
not enough people die according to Moreau.
Right, because what happens during the siege of the anthill, the taking of the anthill?
The people are like, this is stupid.
Yeah, we can't even. They're being mowed down by the Germans. They can't get like more than a few feet from their trench.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't. They can't, like, they literally can't. Like, you can't move forward. And some of them go back. Some of them just, like, some of them, like, can't even get out of the trench because mm-hmm. bodies keep falling on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so what does Moreau say to that?
Kill all of them.
Well, he decimate them. Mm-hmm. He's like, as punishment, you need to kill 1/10 of all the men in our army.
No, because when he sees through the thing, he wants them to just shoot them
down. Oh, that's right. That's right. He insists on turning their own guns on their men to mm-hmm. chase them out of the trenches. And what does the gunner say to that?
No.
And that's a little plot point that comes in later.
Mm-hmm.
So because they don't take the anthill and Moreau needs to save his own face, he's like, we need to execute.
His face is already gone.
He has a big scar. Good observation. He's like, because they were cowards, they did not take the anthill while we and the officers sat and drank our tea in comfort. We need to execute like 1/10 of the men. And they're like, that's a little too many. And he's like, all right, 100 men.
No.
And they're like, Kirk Douglas is like, can't do that. And they're like, well, tell you what, we'll do one man from each.
We'll just kill all of them.
We'll do one man from like each regiment or whatever. So 3 men. We'll just set an example. We'll execute 3 men. And the men who get selected are one guy.
We totally missed the whole plot.
Well, there's a build up to all this, but yeah. Like there's one guy who witnessed his commanding officer kill one of his own men accidentally.
Quote, accidentally.
In an act of real cowardice.
Mm-hmm.
One man who's just like an undesirable.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't really know what that means, but he's kind of like big and dopey and he's like, I'm a social undesirable. And one man who was chosen just randomly.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who saw his commanding officer kill a guy, you know that he was chosen because the commanding officer is just mm-hmm. trying to get rid of him. But Kirk Douglas is like, this is ridiculous. Like, we can't just execute. These guys need to stand trial. So they go, they have a court-martial hearing.
Which is, I can't swear on this show, never mind.
You can't what?
Swear on this show.
It's ridiculous. It's a kangaroo court. Like, mm-hmm. they had made their decision that they were going to execute these guys before they even sat down. He's not allowed to introduce any evidence or call any witnesses or anything. And then you've got like this, like not their night in prison before they get executed.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk Douglas goes up to the commanding officer who he finds out killed one of his own men. He's like, well, since you're a jerk, so I'm going to make you be the guy in charge of the execution. You have to blindfold the men yourself. and look them in the eye. And you get one final moment where you think they might get freed because Kirk Douglas finds out that General Moreau called for his men to be fired upon. And he gets like sworn affidavits and stuff, but it doesn't go anywhere. Well, it doesn't go anywhere till the end.
Yeah.
The three men are executed by a firing squad. And it's very tragic. One of the men gets in a fight in prison and ends up unconscious.
This is before they get killed.
Right. Severely brain injured. And they're like, tie him to a stretcher and prop him up so we can fire squad him. And then they get executed. And then in the end, Moreau loses his position as well because his boss finds out that he called upon his men to be fired. But we have this cool scene at the very end between Corporal Brulard and Colonel Dax, between Adolph Monju and Kirk Douglas, because Adolph Monju the whole time thought that Kirk Douglas was trying to get justice for these men for why?
For himself.
What does that mean?
He wanted a promotion.
Yeah. And Adolph Monju couldn't fathom of why Kirk Douglas would do this for another person, like would do this out of the goodness of his heart. And it's this like sort of angry, ugly scene at the end where he's like, and it's sort of used to illustrate like, here's the difference between like the old army and the new army. Like this new army is coming up. This new world is coming up. People actually care for people. And the old world is this whole like every man for himself.
Mm-hmm.
What a bunch of jerks we are. And then he's like, well, your men are going back out to fight tomorrow. So
bye.
Go tell him, even though they're all torn to pieces, go tell him. So Kirk Douglas goes to go tell his men. And what happens in the last scene?
Really gross.
But like what happens?
Crying. I don't want to talk about it.
They've captured a German woman and he finds his men all at a beer hall, and they've captured a German woman and they force her to sing a German song, I guess, because she only speaks German. And she starts singing and all the men start weeping.
And singing.
And singing along with her. And then Kirk Douglas is like, I'm going to go to bed. He just leaves. And it's a really creepy end scene. They don't do anything to the woman. They make her sing, but they don't like, you expect something like violent to happen to her because the men are just like, they look like crazed animals. But then she sings and they all like are like weeping. And you realize just how shattered these men are. Like they're ruined men. Mm-hmm. Well, and you even meet a guy in the very beginning who has PTSD, who's shell-shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens to him?
He dies.
No, what happens to him? He gets, Brulard meets him. He's like, what's wrong, soldier? And he's like, I don't want to go out there. And he slaps him. And then he's like, get out of my army.
Good.
And I'm like, yeah, I was like, well, that guy got off light. Mm-hmm. Like, because again, in World War I, you could, if you were shell-shocked to the point where you couldn't function, you were executed. That was a British thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like they would be like, oh, you're a coward. You're just fire squad. Like, you're no good. And there was this like, the whole like plot of this is based around the fact that men who can't fight are no good for morale. So you should execute them in front of people and that'll be good for morale. How's that?
These people didn't go to school for psychology.
Stanley Kubrick had this philosophy. His philosophy was that human beings are generally awful and will do awful things, and that we have a tendency to be the worst people in the world.
Well, it's impossible for anything else to be the worst people in the world.
It's true. And that war is the reason he made war films. He made four war films, three which were like made kind of like his three main. He made one before this, but he disowned it. There was this movie, there was Paths of Glory. There was Dr. Strangelove, and there was Full Metal Jacket. And he's like, the reason he liked to make war films was because war is kind of like it distills humanity down to its essence, because everyone has to act like sort of like as extreme human beings, and it is the way you can sort of like show, here's what we like, here's our ideals versus what people are actually like. Like human idealism comes right up against human behavior, and we all want to believe that we are these like noble beasts who fight for glory and fight for honor, but at the end of the day we're all just beasts.
I think a lot of people now at this point in time just doesn't believe that.
Well, yeah, but at the time especially, you know, he made this movie in the 50s, so it was like Korean War, pre-Vietnam, and we were starting to get into this strong disillusionment with war. We hadn't quite hit the Vietnam era, which is when Dr. Strangelove would come out. And
also when people were like, maybe human beings aren't that great.
Right. And this is really just an indictment against like the military industrial system and showing that there's no path to glory in this system. Like you will not find glory in this kind of a world. Now, you didn't like this movie.
No.
How come?
Because I'm tired of, I think in a different part of my life, yes, I would probably enjoy this movie. I think it is a well-made movie and I think it's good,
mm-hmm.
but I'm just tired of horrible things.
Yeah.
Happening to people.
Yeah.
Tired of it. And I don't want to watch it and I don't want to read it. I'm done.
So you're at the point now where you're like, I don't need a movie to tell me that all this stuff is horrible.
Yes.
Because of, just look around. Look around at the world that we're facing. What is something that you appreciated about the movie? Something you liked?
I mean, it was a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the acting and I appreciate that it was a good movie.
Yeah.
It's just not something I want to watch.
It's not like let's kick back and watch Paths of Glory.
Yeah.
Everyone, let's grab some burgers and pop on a movie. Do you want to watch the second Hunger Games or do you want to watch Paths of Glory?
Neither. Sorry, little known fact about me, I don't like the Hunger Games.
So, if you had to choose.
Neither. I'd eat the burger and go up into my room and do my homework.
I'm going to propose the new phrase, eat the burger, is a shorthand way of saying, I don't want to watch any of these things you have to offer.
Yeah.
So, what do you want to do tonight? I'm just going to eat the burger tonight. Nothing looks good.
Except this burger.
Kirk Douglas, I thought, was great in this movie. He really chews the scenery.
There were some scenes where I'm like, that's not good acting. But
from
otherwise,
him?
From everyone.
Yeah, it gets really over the top at times. Like just yelling.
There was like, I think in between the two men before the one guy gets killed by his commanding officer.
Uh-huh.
That part made me lose a little bit of immersion.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. It just
felt a little theatrical.
Not only theatrical, just a little like not real. It just felt like it was being pushed, like forced. Like the guy who got killed was not great.
No.
At the acting, but
yeah, it's a strange. Yeah, it's very stylized, and I can see. And there are times in the movie is very naturalistic, and then times in the movie is very just like, almost like you're watching a cartoon. It's so like the characters are so villainous. But
also the sudden like personality change like kind of threw me off as well. 'Cause I'm like, people, that's not what?
Here's the quote I was looking for. Kubrick said, one of the attractions of a war or crime story is that it provides an almost unique opportunity to contrast an individual or our contemporary society with a solid framework of accepted value, which the audience becomes fully aware of and which can be used as a counterpoint to a human individual emotional situation. Further, war acts as a kind of hothouse for forced, quick breeding of attitudes and feelings. Attitudes crystallize and come out into the open. Conflict is natural when it would, in a less critical situation, have to be introduced almost as a contrivance and would thus appear forced or even worse, false. Yeah, war, you know what it is always life or death. It's always life or death. And I appreciate that. He uses it kind of as this, like, let's just cut through all the BS. We're in a war. Now everyone just gets to act at their worst. I liked the acting. I liked the way he used a lot of like really long shots. It's a Kubrick thing to do. He moved his camera around a lot. He does stuff where like you're following the action in the war, like just follows Kirk Douglas. Like it never cuts away when he's running through the trenches and there's bombs going off and men falling and dying. And then all of a sudden, like he'll just zoom way out and then he'll zoom way in on these tight focus. And it's almost like he's a documentary filmmaker. And that was really unusual at the time. Like people were like,
ah, yes, I remember something else I did not like about the movie.
What?
When the people were dying, I'm sorry. It did not look like people were dying. It looked like people were sleeping or like falling over because they wanted to take a nap.
It's a little stagey. I think it's because Kubrick was doing it in one long take, so he didn't have the
one guy just did a somersault. He didn't he just like went into a somersault.
He didn't
just
have the benefit of like really close up deaths or like.
I don't really care about the close up deaths, but you know, you don't see a dead person tuck his knees and go into a somersault.
Well, that's what I'm saying is like because everyone kind of had to do it in the moment, you couldn't like cut away and do like now we're shooting your death. Everyone just kind of had to fall, and there was no like squibs or anything. There was no like blood. So you were like, are they just falling over? Are they getting shot?
Because sometimes it was weird because sometimes you would see them move afterwards. And one guy
which you don't immediately die when you get shot.
No, but you also I don't know did they get shot in the legs? Because then it would make sense. But clearly they didn't all get shot directly in the kneecaps.
So so you pointed that out while we were watching the movie.
That also took me out of the movie.
I don't have any problem with it. I didn't notice it. You pointed it out. The guy who played the social undesirable Private Farrell. Was fired during the filming of the movie. Some of his scenes were actually shot with a body double. He had been in a previous Kubrick film. He became apparently so unpredictable and impossible to work with that Kubrick just fired him before his scenes were done being filmed. I don't know what scenes they were, but he was like, get out.
Bye.
I'll never work with you again. There is hardly any music in this movie. It's almost all entirely drum.
Mm-hmm.
You just it's very sparse. The movie was partly written by Jim Thompson, who wrote The Killing and is famous for writing these crime novels that are deeply distressing about deep psychological horrible people. Also Calder Willingham worked on the script, but ultimately a ton of people worked on the script and a bunch of people got credit for it. So we discussed that the woman in the end, Christiane Harlan, who is credited as Suzanne Christian, later married Kubrick. So everything worked out well for him. Not so much for the woman he was married to at the time, who he divorced to marry her. But it was an unhappy marriage, and they were probably doomed from the start. Anyway, like I said at the beginning, the French didn't like it. It's particularly the French military. Didn't like it.
It wasn't a great morale booster.
Wasn't a big morale booster. It was, I believe, not allowed. They didn't release it in France until 1975. In Germany, they withdrew it also because Germany was trying to be friends with France at the time. Spain didn't like it because Spain was under the control of Francisco Franco, the man who was responsible for such wonderful movies as Pan's Labyrinth and The Murder of Children. The reason that General Franco, who was the fascist leader of Spain, who caused the Spanish Civil War, which led Guillermo del Toro to make all those movies set during the Spanish Civil War. Horrible man. He didn't like the movie, so it didn't get shown in Spain until 1986. In Switzerland, they censored the movie at the request of the Swiss Army until 1970. In American bases in Europe, the American military banned it from being shown. It was not a well-liked movie by militaries because it was quite critical of, I don't know if you noticed this in the movie, of the military. This is a movie that basically is like...
No.
You're going to get treated like garbage in the military. War is stupid. War is pointless. War is horrible. And your commanding officers hate you and they will execute you to gain their own advantage. Like you said, not an easy movie to watch during hard times. Not the kind of movie you watch to feel good at the end. But yes, a beautifully made film. Beautifully acted, beautifully scripted. And then kind of just kicked around for a while. Like it really didn't come into its own until the 70s and 80s when Kubrick was suddenly people were like, we love Stanley Kubrick. What's with this Paths of Glory movie that has all these famous people in it? And then it was sort of brought back. The Criterion edition, if you get your hands on it, I was not able to get my hands on the Criterion edition for us to watch it. So we did not get to watch the beautifully restored version. We watched the old I can't even remember it, MGM.
Honestly, I didn't know.
MGM DVD release. And So in the Criterion edition, you get to see it all cleaned up. There's documentaries, there's commentary tracks. I really wish I could have seen that one.
You know, Criterion should really sponsor us.
They should. They should. Because we would love money. there was a happy ending written for this movie where the men do not get executed and everyone goes home happy.
That's dumb.
No one really knows if it was ever filmed or if it was intended. The story goes that Kubrick wrote it because it was ridiculous so that they would tell him, this is stupid, change it back. Because he thought if he presented the actual ending, they would make him change it to a happy ending. So some people think it was a little bit of like reverse psychology where he was like, I made a happy ending for the war movie. And they were like, this is dumb. Don't write. So who knows? But it is currently considered one of the greatest war movies, if not the greatest war movie ever made, because it's one of the rare war movies that doesn't try to make war look like it's a good thing at all.
Mm-hmm.
Kubrick was good at that. So that's it. There's really not a whole lot of, there's a ton to say, but I don't have the vocabulary to sit and discuss,
and not the time either.
Well, just it's, if you want, there's so many wonderful, like, just get online and let's look up Paths of Glory. People have done documentaries about this movie. One of my favorite little bits of trivia about it though is there was a Tales from the Crypt episode called Yellow, which I saw and I did not realize this at all, based on a 1952 comic book, that one of the Tales from the Crypt comic books that was directed by Robert Zemeckis. It stars Eric Douglas, who is Kirk Douglas's son, and Kirk Douglas, and it has a, and it's a tribute to Paths of Glory, because it's about a colonel whose son is going to be killed during World War II for cowardice, going to be executed for cowardice, and how the colonel tells his son that it's all a show, that the guns they're going to be firing have blanks in them, and he's not really going to be executed. The guns don't have blanks,
mm-hmm.
but he doesn't want his son to collapse and embarrass himself in front of the firing squad. And so it's not really a horror episode. It's just sad. Horrible war episode, but it does have Kirk Douglas and Eric Douglas, and it's a famous episode of Tales from the Crypt, and you can find that online. So Paths of Glory. Ollie, I know that you were like, I am sick daddy.
Stop talking
of war movies. However, if someone was looking for
A really depressing, horrible war movie?
I was going to say, if someone was looking for a good movie about war that is critical of war, would you suggest this war? Or would you suggest like one of our Game of
Thrones? I would talk to them. I wouldn't know them. Because nobody I know wants to watch war movies.
I would recommend Paths of Glory. I think if you're looking to complete your film knowledge and you haven't seen, and you've watched all of Kubrick's stuff, you're missing out if you haven't seen Paths of Glory.
If somebody was like, I want to watch a movie that makes me feel really bad about everything in the world, then yes.
Yes, yes. But you've already covered that it's a quality film. It is mm-hmm. just not the kind of movie you want to like bathe in. You want to be like, I love the past. I mean, if someone was just like, man, oh man, when I just want to kick back and watch some Paths, I'd be like, you probably should like, if you watched it, it'd be like watching like Grave of the Fireflies like every night. I'd be like, you watch Grave of the Fireflies a lot. You should probably like make some new friends or something. So that is Paths of Glory. Our next movie is 1957's The Curse of Frankenstein. Are you excited about cursing Frankenstein? I mean, are you excited about his curse? It has one of your favorite actors in it. Christopher Lee, also known as Saruman from The Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
I know you love Christopher Lee because you like The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that's...
And it also has Peter Cushing from Star Wars.
I don't know who that is.
It's about Luke Skywalker and he has his sword.
His sword?
Star Wars. Peter Cushing, he played Grand Moff Tarkin in Star Wars. You'd recognize me as him. Curse of Frankenstein, Hammer Film. One of the Hammer Film Frankenstein movies. Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee were famous for doing it. We will be watching that next time. It is a horror movie.
Is it actually a horror movie?
Yes, because Hammer Horror did actual horror with literal blood and guts and monsters.
So it's a gore movie.
They were like, let's take Frankenstein and let's make 70 films about Frankenstein, and everyone, people's faces will fall off and stuff, and there's cannibalism. And
so it's not a horror movie.
It has nothing to do with the novel. It has some characters with the same name.
So it's not a horror movie. It's a gore movie.
Actually, I don't know. This might be, I don't know which one this is. I've watched a lot of them. It has Victor Frankenstein in it. He makes a monster in it, and the monster gets loose. So we'll figure out what it's about, and we'll compare it to other Frankensteins. Are you excited?
Sure.
Awesome. Thank you all for watching.
It's funny because this is the same time of year that Frankenstein is happening at my school.
You can tell them all about it, and tell me all about it when we'll see you. I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And we'll see you when it's Del Toro time.